Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week. This is an email from Matthew.
Starts with, howdy. I have been listening to your show for several weeks now and have found that your unique philosophy has begun to pay dividends in my LSAT journey. However, I am curious as to your thoughts about other measures we can take to ensure our best performance on test day. I know by far the most critical LSAT strategy is the one where you understand everything you read. But I have heard that certain break regimens or beverages can help your score slightly.
This is interesting. Matthew has focused on the most important thing, and then something that I would put way down the scale to the point where actually I don't want people to think
a zero to the point of potentially negative.
Harmful. Yeah.
Matthew says, do you guys think picking the right snack or comfortable outfit can actually help you focus and earn a higher score? Or are the people reporting that they score higher when they drink an energy drink experiencing score variance? Almost certainly the latter, Matthew. Or they're just like trying to get a free case of fucking Red Bull by making posts on Reddit. You know, like, why would you believe any of these people saying any of these things?
Yeah.
Furthermore, if you're good at the test, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. You could put Ben Olsen in a suit of armor and he would be just fine, I'm sure, taking the LSAT because he's good at the LSAT. You don't need, it's, man, this kind of like being real nitpicky about the details that matter not a lot. You know, it's like the exact opposite, by the way, of like really being comfortable and cozy is being like highly particular months in advance about what type of snack and sweatpants you're going to wear on the test. It's like, that's, You should wear whatever is on your floor, you know, that you were wearing yesterday. You should just pick that up and put them on and go take the test. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
With all that being said, are there any little strategies you recommend or things that helped you perform your best aside from studying?
I mean, I think we've said these things before, and I don't know that I would call them little strategies. I think we try to focus on the big strategies. They are understand the test, as you've already pointed out, but it's also things like treat every test as a practice test, right? Sign up, plan to take the test more than once. Maybe that's two times, three times, four times. In other words, it's a way of not giving the test so much respect, right? What else?
Treat it as a fun, easy game that you're good at. When you're taking your official test, mm-hmm. you need to feel privileged and happy to be doing this fun, easy thing that you get to do. It's the equivalent of, you know, when you're Magic Johnson stepping up to play one-on-one against somebody, you're happy to roll them the ball to take the ball first, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not rushing to, I have to get the ball first. It's like, yeah, we're playing one-on-one. All right, here you go.
Yeah, let's go.
You know, let's do this. And, for me, the thing that I did on, I loved in a test, I did this in almost all of my tests that I ever took, including all my law school exams and everything, is that they would say start and everybody would frantically start typing. And I never would start on the start. I would instead like look around the room, see how frantically everybody else was, you know, treating the next 3 hours of their life. Mm-hmm. And instead I would like take a breath, maybe stretch a little bit, you know, and just make sure that I'm doing it on my terms. That's my equivalent of, you know, rolling the ball to the other guy being like, all right, let's do this. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, sure, I'm going to spend most of the time working, but I don't need to like spend every precious second, because that's not going to be the difference, right? How I approach it is going to be the difference. And so the energy drink, that's not the difference. The snack, not the difference. The sweatpants, not it. But your attitude toward the test, that's, I think, the big difference in whether you're going to perform, you know, near the top of your range versus near the bottom of your range. Bottom of your range is the exact opposite of that. Being all crazy about the time, frantically obsessing over every single detail. It's like the guy who, in the old days of paper and pencil test, the guy who brought the entire box of pencils to the test. It's like, really, dude, you thought you were going to break 45 pencils in the course of a 3-hour exam?
Yeah.
You already lost. What are you doing?
Yep.
All right. Anything else for Matthew?
No. Keep up the good work.
With me, I have a former Demon student, Tyler Tim. Tyler, you're kind of a success story for Demon students, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your whole story. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So how did you find us in the first place? And just, I guess, you know, as much as possible, just walk us through your LSAT experience with the Demon.
Yeah. So I decided I wanted to go to law school. I remember the day really well because I called my buddy. It was May 17th of 2021.
Wow.
I said, I'm going to start studying for the LSAT and I'm going to take it in August. And he goes, I think you need a little more time to study than that.
Okay.
Don't know if that's going to be enough. And I said, oh, I'll be fine. I'm just going to dive right into it and start. And so I was driving a lot for work at that point in time, and I was listening to podcasts. So I thought, oh, there's probably an LSAT podcast. And I ran into the Thinking LSAT podcast with you and Ben. And so I was listening to that and kind of getting my head wrapped around it. And I remember you were talking about the different sections. You were talking about LR and reading comp. And I remember going, what the heck is LR? I'm screwed. Maybe I do need a little more time to study for that. And you were talking about the Demon. And so I figured, I'll give this one a shot. So I signed up for it and I just started to use it as you and Ben showcase on the podcast. So I did some drilling, did a couple of sections, did a game here, or did a full length test here and there. And that's kind of how I started getting into it. Felt like I was responding really well. Initially, my diagnostic score was a 145.
Okay.
So I felt like that wasn't very good initially, and I knew I wanted to improve tremendously.
And just for the listener, if this is the first time you've ever heard anything about the LSAT, 145 is actually a really pretty strong starting score. It's a very normal starting score. There's nothing mm-hmm. to be ashamed of with a 145. You definitely don't want to end with a 145. I mean, mm-hmm. that's not a score that you should go to law school with, period. But mm-hmm. starting at a 145, yeah, I mean, we think we can get you 15 or 20 points or maybe more from there. So that's not a bad place to start at all.
And that's actually almost exactly what happened with me. So I kept studying, kept practicing with everything. And I realized pretty quick that I hit a plateau. And so to start, I was using the initial, the basic, I believe is what it's called.
Demon basic. Yeah.
Yep,
the lowest Demon basic. Level of subscription, $95 a month. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I was using that for basically up until the August test. And I didn't quite listen to all your advice. I should have waited before taking the August test, uh-huh. but I took it and I scored a 157. So okay. I initially went up, what is that? 12 points. But I didn't feel satisfied with that because I had bought in to yours and Ben's concept of don't pay for law school. And I was determined to make that the case, to not pay for law school. So I said, okay, I'll invest a little more initially, and then I upgraded to premium, whatever the highest one is.
Live. The top level is live.
Live. Yep. Yep. So I did that from August until January, every single day. And a normal study schedule for me was I would wake up in the morning and I would do a full section, a full 35-minute section, and I would study. I'd review that section for another 25 minutes. So I was dedicating at least an hour every single morning to a game or a reading comp or an LR section. And I found that that was a lot more beneficial and a lot more rewarding than just doing the drilling. The drilling was great, right? During lunch, 10 minutes, hey, I'll do a game here. I'll do five or six questions, read a passage and answer. But I found that I really started to improve when I was doing the full 35-minute sections.
Okay.
Because at this point, October, November, December, I really hit a plateau of 155 to 159. Could not break into that 160 range. And I was taking full-length practice tests once every 10 days, roughly. Every Saturday, I'd sit down, do the whole test, and then review the test in the afternoon. So that was my normal schedule. An hour in the morning, maybe 10, 15 minutes throughout the day, and then another hour in the afternoon. And then every weekend, I try to take a full test.
And what about classes? Because you were subscribed to the live program at that time.
Yes. So that was generally my hour in the evenings, was doing the classes. And I'm pulling up the instructors here just so I remember. Darian was amazingly helpful for the reading comp. So for me personally, in terms of best to worst, I was best at the games, middle at reading comp, and I was worst at LR. But I knew that I could get pretty close to minus zero in the games. And if I could just pull up my reading comp and be proficient enough at LR, that I'd be able to score very well. And Darian was super, super helpful. Matt DeMont, I believe he's at Maryland. He was the one who pushed me to that top tier of games where I could consistently get minus zero, minus one, maybe minus two. And so that was kind of my strategy as I was going into it. And so I'm getting close to the January test, which is the one I had signed up for. And I broke the 160 finally. And then I was perpetually scoring between 160 and 164, just over and over again. I had five good tests in a row before my official test. I took the test in January and I scored a 163. So I went up 18 points, all due to the demon. Also, the other thing that I say was helpful was the residual learning through the podcast, just constantly being in the mind frame and the mindset of LSAT, focus over and over again. And when I took the test, I did hear yours and Ben's voice in the back of my head. No, think about this, attack it this way. So just that complete immersion, which I believe the live is needed to be completely immersed in what you are doing, studying for the LSAT. So I scored my 163. I was very happy with that. I said, okay, that's good. I'd only had one test at a 164. And I know you said if you score higher, take it again. And one thing I didn't quite do, so don't scold me for it, is I didn't wait until August to apply. I said, I'll give it a shot. I'll apply now and see what happens. And I'm from Nebraska. And so I applied to University of Nebraska-Lincoln and Creighton, which is in Omaha. And I heard back within a week. I was accepted right away. And Creighton actually gave me a full ride, full tuition and fees. And in Omaha, where I am as a regional school, it's a pretty highly esteemed regional school. You know, it's not a Chicago or a Harvard, but that was never my goal in the first place. And so due to basically that 9 months of consistent study and complete immersion, and through the help of you guys, I was able to obtain a full tuition and fee scholarship.
All 3 years automatically renewable?
Automatically. I have to get above a 2.0, which they said is if you get below a 2.0, you get kicked out anyways. So
right. Great. So that's not one of these gotcha scholarships where, mm-hmm. you know, it's just for your first year and then it's mm-hmm. harder than you think to renew. It's full tuition and fees.
Yep.
Does it escalate if they raise tuition and fees?
Yes.
Awesome. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So 9 months. And it sounds like you were doing, Tyler, roughly 20 hours a week, something like that.
I'd say that's pretty accurate. Yep.
Okay.
Basically 3 hours every day.
Yeah. That's a lot. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. we think that you can make steady progress with less than that, but it depends on how far you have to go and mm-hmm. it depends how high you're reaching and it depends, you know, just what's it going to take for you to get to the school you need to go to at the price you want to pay, which really in our book should be $0. So mm-hmm. in 9 months, 18 points of improvement, you wouldn't have gotten into that school with a 145.
No, definitely not.
And instead, you end up with a full tuition scholarship. What's it worth? What's tuition and fees?
Oh, collectively, I want to say it's right at 50,000, just I think 49 or something like that. So $150,000 over the next 3 years.
$150,000 for 9 months worth of, 20 hours a week, part time job for 9 months. Of course, you had to pay us for Demon and Demon Live. You had to pay the LSAC to take the test a couple times.
Yeah,
but you end up saying, so whatever, you invested $5,000,
if not even.
Yeah. A couple thousand dollars, and you end up going, saving $150,000. It did take 9 months. You had to be patient. It did take hard work. You had to make sacrifices in your personal life. That is amazing, Tyler. Congratulations. I know you are gun shy about talking to me about not, following all of our advice, but hey, you're following our most important piece of advice, which is don't pay for law school. Yep. And that is just excellent. So any more tips, for a Demon student just starting out, what do you recommend they do?
Just be consistent with it. One of the things that I do like about the Demon is it always has you right at the cusp of your max capability. It's always giving you that problem that's just a little bit too hard for you to ace at that exact moment. But that is where you really learn. And the other thing, and this is the thing I think I wasn't doing well enough going up to the August LSAT, was review the questions that you miss. Don't just go, oh, dang, okay, yep, it was this, and okay, it's that for that reason. All right, next one. Really take the time to go into the LR, to go back into the reading comp passage and go, that's the point. Because what you and Ben say about the test is, maybe with 3 years, I could have gotten into the 170s and the 180s just with constant determination, because the test is masterable if you take the time to really understand it. Don't just gloss over and glaze over. After 35 minutes doing a section, you can be kind of tired, but get up, walk around for a second, grab a cup of coffee or a water or whatever, and then sit back down and attack it with that same vigor and mindset that you had before. And that's where I saw the greatest growth in my ability to do well on the test.
Amazing. You start law school this fall?
Yeah. August 15th is orientation day.
What are you doing between now and then?
So I work full time in aviation. That's what the kind of law I want to get into is aviation law. So I work at an airport here in Omaha and run aircraft sales and aircraft charter and business development and stuff.
You going to be able to work through law school at all?
I'm going to try to do a little bit here and there, but I did talk to just 2 days ago, I had a conversation with the owners of the company. And I said, hey, I appreciate you letting me continue to work. If and when it does become too much, I'll throw my hands up and go, law school is my number one priority. Please give me a little reprieve. And they said, we're here to support you all the way through. Let us know when that happens.
Amazing. All right. So shout out to Matt Dumont and to Darian for being awesome LSAT Demon instructors. You're giving advice for students to be consistent with it and to make sure that they are thoroughly reviewing all of their mistakes, really understanding it, not just looking at the answer key and going, well, yeah, it's D because it says it's D. So it's not B because it's D because it's that's the one, not really understanding.
Don't do that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Any other tips before I let you go?
Just stick to the process. It'll work out and you can go to law school for free. I promise.
Yeah. 9 months, 145 to 163 and a full ride. Congratulations, Tyler. Thanks so much for coming on and for giving your advice to LSAT Demon students. Hello, Ben and Nathan. I'd like your advice on how to approach my studying over the next month and a half as I prepare for the August LSAT. For context, I have a 172 on record from the April 2022 LSAT, which I obtained after a year of self-study with a combination of free resources, Khan Academy, PowerScore books from the library, forums, and other PDFs that I found online, etc. Probably pirated my book, Eniola. I am not happy with that score as it is at the very bottom of the range that I was scoring prior to the test. Wow. I was also affected by a 2-hour outage in the middle of the April test, but I'm not really sure if that negatively affected my score. Cool. I think a month is enough time to close the gaps in my understanding and to really master the test. However, money is a huge consideration for me. What demon plan would you recommend for someone like me? Do I need the live plan? Or on the flip side, could I gamble on score variance working in my favor and keep doing what I've been doing? I think that this person, Anonymous, should do 1 month of live. I think it will help you a lot. I know that it's money for you. I think, though, that we will clarify a lot of the stuff or help you to ignore a lot of the bullshit that you learned from Khan and whatever books you checked out at the library. I really recommend that you apply for our fee waiver. Apply for the LSAC fee waiver. You clearly don't have money to burn. If you got the LSAC fee waiver, you could then get 20% off any demon plan, including the live plan. You could also get 4 months of Demon Basic for nothing. I mean, for $30 total, because that's what LSAC charges us to work with you.
Yeah, I
agree.
Get
that fee waiver. It's worth a lot. You get free attempts at the LSAT. You get the credential assembly service. You get all kinds of other free shit. So get that fee waiver, then study with us for nothing or for a discount.
I mean, this correspondent has eked out a lot of progress using all these other free resources. I just wonder if they've used Demon Free too. Like, there's full tests in there with full explanations, lessons, past recorded classes of Nathan. I don't know. Like, if money is really tight and you're kind of waiting for that fee waiver to come through, and you can't do live, we'll do that. Eke as much out of that as you can and start getting that mindset that we want to instill in you.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. They don't list the Demon Free as one of the resources that they've previously used. I mean, I think there's at least a week or two worth of stuff there in Demon Free.
Yeah.
And that could blow your mind. So yeah, if you end up, you know, paying us, that's great. But if you use our free resources, we appreciate you and thank you so much for writing in. I mean, you're going to kill it eventually. You know, remember, you can always take it in September and or October and or November. Mm-hmm. If you don't get it done in August, but you should get something at the, you know, top half of your range, let's say. Never settle for something at the bottom of your range.
We have an email here from Damien.
Damien says, hey guys, in the last around 5 months of studying, I've gone from a diagnostic score of 157 to averaging in the low to mid 170s on practice tests. I've gotten my logic games down to a typical minus zero, LR down to minus zero or minus one with an occasional minus two, but my reading comp is still ranging from minus two to minus five. I got a minus zero in reading comp recently, but have not managed to replicate it. I don't feel as if I did anything special on that attempt that I could apply consistently. Main point questions give me a lot of trouble because I often get it down to two options that seem really good and have a hard time deciding. That's okay, your entire problem with reading comp right there, by the way.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ben. Well, I was going to say, we have advice for you, or I have advice, and I think you're going to agree, Nathan, that will help you not only with main point questions, but with all these other questions you're missing in reading comp. And that is, articulate the main point when you're done reading the passage. If you can't identify the main point while you're reading it, or at the very least when you're done reading it, before you go into the questions, you have a problem.
Predict the answer on reading comp generally.
Yep.
And that's true for main point questions more than anywhere else, but it's also true for even the detailed questions. You know, what did the author think about this one little detailed bit? The difference between me and everybody else is that I'll cover up the answer choices and I'll think about it. I'll go, well, what did the author say about that little bit? And if I have to go back and reread, I'll go back and reread before I look at the answer choices. Everybody else just goes, what did the author say about that? Huh, I don't know. Let's see what A says. And then they start reading answer choices. And when you read answer choices hoping that they're correct, you just get romanced by them.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%. You should be predicting after you read the question and before you read the answer choices. But I see this main point prediction as like the meta prediction, right? It's the prediction you make before you even get into the questions and before, and who cares if the first question is the main point question or not? I don't care. You need to know the main point.
Yes.
And you need to come to it through your own assessment of the passage, not through a, let me get tossed around by the answer choices and find the two are tempting. You've already lost at that point.
Yep. They're going to ask you the main point. They're also going to ask you the primary purpose, which is to prove their main point.
Yep.
They're going to ask you for the author's attitude, which is like,
it's going to agree with that main point. Main
point. Yeah. It's half of the questions, even really detailed ones, are related to your understanding of the main point. So what do they want? Why does this document exist? The thing I say in class all the time is, hey, this document arrived in our law office. Mm-hmm. I'm the boss. I've assigned you to read this passage. I've assigned you to read this document.
Yep.
You're coming to my office and you're telling me what the main, why is this document in my face right now? What is this?
What is the point?
What do they want?
Yep.
Not just what, but what about it? Not the topic. But what about that
Not
topic?
A summary either. Not, well, at first they told us that they had some problems last year, and then they told us that they kind of couldn't resolve those problems unless they talked to someone else. It's like, no. Bottom line. What's the bottom line?
What do
I need to walk away from with this?
Yeah, I want 10 words out of your mouth. Choose wisely. What 10 words are you going to choose to tell the boss why this document arrived certified mail in our law office?
10 words with sufficient detail. Sometimes people do this. They start to get it, but then they go too general, right? Too broad. They're like, oh, this person has a problem. Oh, really? They have a problem?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I hate that. I hate the, well, it's, they go like way meta, where it's like, well, it's about a debate. Yeah, okay. About a debate about what? And what does the author think about that debate?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do have to get specific, but I mean, what I want people to do is to like focus in on what's that one little nugget? What's that one little thing? If you had just an elevator pitch, here's what this document's about in a nutshell. What's it going to say? What are you going to say? And you have to think about that. I mean, I'm thinking about that even as I'm reading the passage, like where are you going with this? What's your agenda? What do you want? What are you selling me here? And you do all that kind of prediction, definitely, way in advance before you ever read the question.
Cool.
And then do it on the detailed questions as well. When they ask you some specific detail about the passage, please answer that independently of the answer choices. You know, whenever someone says, I always narrow it down to two, I immediately know, okay, that's because you're being too passive. Like you need to answer the questions independently of the answer choices. It's not about the answer choices. It's about you answering the damn question. Then you'll stop. You'll no longer find two good answers.
Yeah. And that's what everyone else is doing too. So it's no points in your favor.
We have an email here from Annika.
Hello, my name is Annika and I've been using the Demon for about 2 months now. My diagnostic score was a 146. And I've gotten my average score to be around 156. I'm hoping to take the September LSAT with a target score of 170. Does that seem unreasonable to achieve in this amount of time? For a little more context, I'm also a computer science major at Penn State, and my GPA is a 3.84. I'm planning on applying to the T14 schools this coming fall, and I'm wondering if I should wait to apply until next year if I need until the October LSAT to achieve my target score.
I think shooting for September sounds good. You know, in a perfect world, we would just have you apply on day one of the cycle. That way you put less pressure on your September LSAT. By the time you take the October LSAT, Yeah. The game is slightly different for T14s because they tend to, you know, like Yale doesn't even evaluate any applications until like January, I think.
Yeah.
But Annika, I would definitely encourage you to apply to some schools outside the T14 because you need to make sure that you're getting scholarship offers so that you can really compare. You know, like don't you think, you know, Wash U in St. Louis, they're going to give Annika a full ride with a 170 something.
Yeah.
And you need to get those offers in hand. You know, if you like the Northeast, Boston College, Boston University, what in DC, GW, and hopefully you get a scholarship from one of the T14 schools as well, or multiple T14 schools as well. But I would just broaden your application range a little bit more. And I would plan on applying at the very beginning of the cycle. Make them bid on you.
Can we talk about poker for a second?
Sure.
Okay. So you have two cards, right?
Yep. And hold them. Yes.
Yeah. And you're Texas Hold'em. You're holding those two cards. Okay. And you, in this special game, have the opportunity to ask the dealer for two more cards, and you can use either set that you want. And you can do that five times. Oops, five. I feel like Annika is just saying, you know what? I'm not going to ask, actually. I'm just going to take it once. I'm going to take whatever cards are given to me and then apply. Right? Like, you can get five sets of two cards.
Yeah.
And play your best hand.
Yeah, because if she's thinking about like September or October, she's thinking about it wrong. You should be looking at your first LSAT in September or October, or whenever your scores indicate you're ready. But you should definitely be thinking about your second LSAT and your third LSAT and potentially your fourth and fifth LSAT.
Yeah.
And if you applied next cycle, you would have, five two-card hands, which is definitely better than one.
Especially when the other people at the table are doing that and you're not. Like, who would play like that, right?
Right. Yeah, your competitors are getting five different two-card hands. And you're just going to roll with one? I'll take my chances. It'll be good.
It looks pretty
good. Now, of course,
it's
not random. And, of course, the first one could be amazing. You know, if you take it in September and you get a 178, that's the equivalent of looking down at a pair of aces. Okay, well, it ain't going to get better than that.
Yeah.
So that's fine. So sure, apply. But if you, even if you look at it and it's a pair of queens, it's like, that's pretty good. But I don't know. Let me just take a look at these other four hands and see what that is. Because, you know, you could potentially do better. And for the world you're talking about, that's, I mean, the arms race is like hotter than it's ever been for the T14 schools, right? Their medians keep going up.
Yeah.
So that's the best reason to just wait until next cycle.
Yeah.
Computer science majors tend to do the very best on the LSAT. Another way of communicating, Ben, early admissions. I was just getting a lot of questions the other day about early application, about early decision programs.
Yeah.
And, you know, our default advice on early decision programs is no, their early decision programs are good for them, not good for you, because most of them are binding and you're telling them I will withdraw all of my applications at every other school if I get into your early decision program, which then gives them no incentive to give you a scholarship. So they're going to like admit you early decision and charge you full price. Well, that sucks. That's not how all early decision programs work, but that's how many early decision programs work. Too many. And so you should have a default presumption that you're not doing their early decision program.
Yep.
But here's a different way of thinking about it. I want you to have your own early decision program.
Yeah.
This is you deciding, not them deciding. This is you deciding. And when you apply on day one with your very best LSAT, you know, you've looked at all five of those two card hands and you found the best one you've got.
Yep.
and you apply at the very beginning of the cycle, and you apply a little bit broadly, a little bit more broadly than you were maybe thinking about applying, well, now all of a sudden, you're making the decisions. Like, they can admit, because they still will admit you early, even if you don't apply in their stupid early decision program.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. So now it's a bidding war, them trying to attract you to their school. And yeah, you're going to decline most of those offers.
Yeah.
But you're going to pick the best one instead mm-hmm. of like hoping for one.
Yeah.
Right. It's the difference between them choosing and you choosing.
Yep.
If you do it our way.
Yeah.
So there's every reason to wait until the beginning of the next cycle. So many reasons to wait until the beginning of the next cycle.
Yeah.
Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.